All right. Hello, everybody. Y'all come on in. This is our I don't normally get to see y'all on a Tuesday, so this is exciting. And we are doing the GLP-1 and medical weight loss call. So let me explain because it's a new call. And we're gonna try it out for a little bit and see how y'all like it and if it's helpful and whatnot. Any type of medical weight loss. So whether or not maybe you're on the shot, you've had maybe weight loss surgery. Anything that you would say is like, Corinne, I have a unique circumstance. I need coaching. I need help. I need advice, whatever that is, when it comes to any type of actual medical intervention type things. So that can even include if you are a diabetic and you've got to do a very special diet or something along those lines. Because I want to make this a really inclusive call for people who feel like I might need additional help, or I need to figure out how this works together, or things like that. It's coaching, Q&A, all the things. So we are going to bring up Coach Ashley, and she will be on stage with me. And then anybody that wants help, you need to raise your hand who would like to come on. And let's see, Melissa, you're up first. There we go. Oh my gosh, Zoom has given me like 400 messages. I'm just like, stop with your damn messages. Oh, so funny. All right. Hey, Melissa. Is it Melissa? I'm sorry, I've got my window. Yes, it is. Okay. Just to make sure I'm calling you by the right name. All right. What you want help with?
So, first of all, this was totally a spur of the moment. I was not planning to join this call. So, I'm excited to get coached today.
Good.
I've been an obese woman since 2021. I have lost nearly 75 pounds. I've been an obese woman through a lot of ups and downs. And in 2024, I made a decision to add a GLP-1. And what I'm noticing is that I am still emotional eating, and I am doing things to work around the reduced hunger so that I can emotionally eat.
Yeah, that's why I tell people it's like emotional eating, unless we deal with the emotions, it will rear its head somehow. So, like for some people, like if they are on the shot, it kills their appetite so much and almost makes them nauseous to the point to where it's like, well, I can't go to the food, but then they'll find themselves doing other things. Now all of a sudden they're shopping, or now I'm just yelling at everyone. Because before I was shoving food in my mouth, and now like all my relationships are going to hell because I never worked through all of my anxiety. I never worked through any of this stuff. So this is why it's smart for y'all to still be getting coached, not on like you don't need coaching on shenanigans.
Yeah, I know what my shenanigans are.
Right. And nobody needs coaching on shenanigans. Like this is how I always like to phrase it. When somebody walks into the Facebook group, they will often say, I'm so stressed right now, and I've got a lot of anxiety. And they will just list problem after problem in their life. And then they'll say, I'm eating at night. I need tips on how to not eat at night. Like, girl, you don't need no tips on how to not eat at night. You need to work on all this. Because if we do tips for your shenanigans, let's say I give you some kind of magic way to not dance around and somehow get your emotional eating done. Then all I'm saying to you is, you know, all this shit that's bothering you? You should keep that and you should do my fix. But I would love for you to just keep feeling like shit. Let's just not even address that. Just like the person comes in and says, I'm eating because all these things are going on. I would like tips on how not to eat at night. And then I see 1,000 obese women run in there with every tip they've ever known. And no one's even asked, could you just tell me why you're so stressed? Let's dig into what's going on there. Maybe we can get you feeling fucking better so that you don't have to do all this eating. Okay. So I just wanted to say that because I think that it's super helpful for people to see why tips and tricks work with mindless eating and they work with habit eating. But they don't fix emotional eating.
I feel like over the last 4 years, I've done a lot of work and have really, I've eliminated a lot of my emotional eating, and I've dealt with like that low-hanging fruit. The things that
What are
still,
you eating over? Like right now, like would say, this is what I keep eating
oh,
over.
so it's anxiety. It's absolutely anxiety driven.
Okay. Why do you have anxiety is the question.
So two things. Number one, the general state of the world. And number two,
Well, no. That is not why we have anxiety.
I am concerned for people I love and their safety with the current political climate without
That
getting
is not why we have
political.
anxiety. Okay, let me
Okay.
be real clear. We have the current state of the world. You have a lot of thoughts about it
Yeah.
that drive your anxiety. And this is good for you because the one thing I know that Melissa can't change is the political climate. If
Correct.
one person could change the political climate, I am 100% sure it would get switched every 2 seconds because everybody in the world has a very different take on what the political climate should be in any corner of this universe. That's why we really want to accept that if I'm feeling anxiety, politics and the world can't give that to me. Otherwise, I now have to say, Corinne, I need you to help me be a very anxious person in the world because my brain will always find problems. So just help me be better, a better anxious lady. And no one's ever asked me that. Nobody's ever said, "Oh my God, can you teach me how to be a better anxious person?" It's like, let's figure out what parts of the political climate in the world that where your thinking is causing anxiety instead of causing things like help, empowerment. Like right now, I want you to think about it. If you
Okay,
have
so
anxiety, it's because
my
I feel
feeling is
disempowered instead
helplessness.
of, okay, helplessness. All right, this is a good one. All right, so what thoughts are you having about the world? We're just going to call it, we're going to give your circumstance, we're going to give it as the world.
Sounds
Or you
good.
can call it United States, whatever you want. Why do you feel helpless?
I feel helpless because I see things happening,
Yeah.
and I feel like there's nothing I can do to have any real impact on it. And that I just
Okay. Well,
kind of
on your
like watching a
family,
train.
correct? Right, on your family. Okay. So let's find something that's happening actually to your family right now that you feel like this is for sure happening to my family right now. It's bad and there's nothing I absolutely could do for it. Can you give me a situation that's like that?
So there's nothing happening to my family at the moment.
Well, that's really good to know because your thought that caused anxiety and helplessness is things are happening to my family and I can't do anything about it. That's your thought that you gave me.
Things
And
are
now,
well, it's things are going to happen to because I can't stop things that are happening. Things are going to happen to my family, and I
like
won't be
what?
able to stop it.
Give me an example of something for sure that you know is coming. And you absolutely know 100% sure this will happen, and you're 100% sure you have zero power to do anything about it.
I don't believe that any of that is a rational thought.
Okay, that is what you've got to do for the anxious person of you and the helplessness person. You're right now letting you have like what you call, what we all call two beliefs, and they're just running interference. And you're just like, I'm watching the train wreck. You're not watching the train wreck of the world. You're watching the train wreck that's happening in your mind. Because right now, one part of you is like, doom, despair, and Melissa can do nothing about it. And you got another side that's like, nothing's actually happening right now. I can't even find one thing when Corinne asks me that is in play. Actually happening, fixing to guarantee happen to my family. And even if that happened, there's nothing I could ever do about it. Like I would be forced to just watch it happen. So when we have what we call like basically two big conflicting beliefs, this is where we have to get better at recognizing our feelings, because your brain is going to run. It's going to run on autopilot. And so if you know, this is what helplessness feels like in my body, this is what anxiety feels like in my body, you will have what we call the early warning system. So you're in the feelings, and that's when you do some calming exercises, and you ground the feeling first by simply doing some deep breathing and just narrating, my heart is beating really fast because I'm thinking this. My breathing is labored because I'm thinking this. My skin is sweaty, crawling, and flushed because I'm thinking this. It does two things. It starts putting your brain very focused on what's happening within your control, because your body is like, that is in your control. And it reminds your brain, when you add on a tagline of, because I'm thinking this, we no longer feel helpless. All of a sudden, we move into awareness. This is my brain doing this. And then we go into what we call changing our thought. But we got to do that first. Otherwise, you got two warring factions in your brain. And, war is no good.
Absolutely.
Only thing that happens is Melissa dies over and over again. She's the little soldier that has to keep running, through the minefield. So then we get to tell ourselves, nothing's actually happening to my family. I don't like what's going, like, I think it'd be good for you to think something. You tell me how it feels. I don't like what's happening in our political climate, but nothing's happening to my family right now, to recreate safety. I don't like what's happening here. Here's what I can control.
So I get that. I feel that. I understand it.
Yes.
Give you an example, because this happened yesterday. So my baseline anxiety is higher than it's been. I am also coming off, I've been off of I switched to anxiety meds, and I stopped taking one under my doctor's care about 2 weeks ago. So I still feel like I'm kind of on a roller coaster for that. And my baseline anxiety is higher than it usually is. And so my thoughts run away and I have trouble concentrating. I become a ragey space cadet. My capacity to deal with anything outside the norm has shrunk considerably. And so yesterday I had a computer issue and it turned out that it was a loose cord, not a big deal. But I crashed out and started throwing things and ate last night because of it. And so and I know that it's my anxiety, and I'm still having trouble in those moments taking that step to stop.
You don't want to stop. What are you wanting to stop in that moment? When you say, I'm
Well,
not taking
by
the
stop,
step.
I mean like take the temperature down on the urge, or take a moment to be a rational human being. Because I feel like I
I
just
don't want you to
leave.
be rational. I want you to be with your feelings. You should be,
No. I know.
well, you can either be with your feelings, or you can keep eating and throwing
Right.
things.
Yeah.
Like, I know that it doesn't sound sexy, but if I had to guess and I said, you know what, I've got the answer to your weight loss program, I think you should totally start throwing things and disrupt all your relationships in your life. You'd be like, well, I don't want to do that. Well, the price we pay for not wanting to be an asshole over here is to feel some feelings. So we need to figure out why your visceral reaction is ooh. Let's go back to yesterday,
Okay.
and the cord is broken, and you go from a 1 to a 10 in a heartbeat. Okay. Why is it so bad to be a 10? If you're not eating, now I want you to imagine being anxious without damage. We're just now going to be anxious. Because most of the time when people say ooh, it's because they don't like the version of them that's screaming, yelling, throwing things and eating.
Yes, correct.
That's not feeling your feelings. I want you to actually feel the feeling. That is reacting. That is avoiding the feeling. That is trying to get away from it. If I throw things, I'm getting away. Throwing things is just like shoving a ding dong in your mouth. No different. Feel now, if we're just going to feel it, what are we feeling in that moment? What would have had to have felt in that moment that you're like, no.
I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I feel like I want to crawl out of my skin. I feel like
Okay. So
I'll get
like
nothing
really
back.
creepy crawly
Yeah,
skin.
I feel a very creepy crawly, like I don't like myself. I want to be outside my brain.
Okay. Other than that, what else?
I feel snappy. And not just at like snappy at every at my pets, at
Well,
my
that's again the reaction. I just
okay.
want you to imagine if you had to sit in a room with yourself, like a padded room. You have no one to yell at, you have nothing to throw, and you have nothing to eat, but you were going to feel like you did yesterday. You are going to be upset that the cord was broken. You are going to have creepy, crawly skin in that room. What else would happen in your body other than creep? Well, all we got right now is creepy crawly skin.
Increased heart rate, like the general anxiety feelings. So the increased
Okay.
heart rate, kind of shaky, sort of just like can't concentrate, can't looking for distraction, and just a very uncomfortable feeling in my own skin.
Okay. And that's the worst that happens.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I want you to just think about this. Why is that bad? Why are you choosing to eat and throw things over just being like, that's anxiety for me. This is what anxiety is. My heart races. My skin, I feel like I'm going to crawl out of my skin. And I have racing thoughts.
I have always, so it's always been, so my knee-jerk reaction is to just try to get myself out of feeling like that as quickly as possible, to
Right, I
not sit
understand
there.
that, but I want you to tell me, why is that so bad? Like now we're looking at it from, like now we're just looking at it. We're not looking at it through your past. Why is that so bad? Why do you need to get away from that is the question.
Because it's uncomfortable.
Okay, it's uncomfortable. I'm sure this coaching session is too.
That's why I'm here, though. Because
I just want you to see you're doing something really uncomfortable. Didn't even know you were going to be doing it. I'm challenging you on your thoughts, and you seem to be
and I
not needing
appreciate
to
that.
throw anything at me or go grab a snack to get through it.
No, because I want to do this. And
So that's what we need to be with anxiety. I want to do this. I want to feel this. Because when I want to feel it for whatever reason, we'll come up with a good reason. But when I want to feel it, guess what I don't have to do? I
turn
don't have
on
to be in a
heat.
hurry to change it.
Okay,
I don't have to like be going on a seek and destroy mission. I don't have to feel helpless anymore when it happens. Because the big thought, like your biggest thought error was that the world is creating my helplessness. It's my attitude about my anxiety is making me feel helpless.
yeah. I've never thought of it that way. And yeah, you're right.
So let's think about why you might want to actually feel like what are the positive effects of feeling your anxiety? Because I think your helplessness isn't coming. I think your helplessness is coming from your anxiety. I mean, I think some of it's coming from the world too, but I think a lot of this is I just feel like d all the way helpless because I can't deal with the world. I can't change that. And my fucking anxiety too. And I'm helpless with that.
Yes, that's exactly it.
Okay. So let's
So
think about positive benefits of feeling your anxiety.
well, first of all, I want to be a woman who can feel my anxiety and not have to escape from it and eat about it and or drink or anything else about it.
Why do you want to be that woman?
Because I feel more power. I feel it, that gives me my power back. I take my power back from the anxiety if I can do that.
What are the other good things about feeling your anxiety? Because it's got positive benefits. I think sometimes we spend so much time making big feelings like monsters. Every person. And whether you're religious or not, I just believe this. God or the greater power gave us all these feelings for damn good reasons. We wouldn't have been given these feelings if we weren't supposed to use them. And then most of us have said, well, these are the awful ones. So I'm just not going to use those. And when you don't use the feelings that we were given, it's like, yeah, they may feel a little gross, but there's positives too. So you're throwing away the positives too. I just want you to know what you're running from and what you could potentially be throwing away because it might be something so valuable that you would regret it. So what else could your anxiety actually be doing for you and you haven't really thought about it that way?
Do you mean like what is it doing for me like right now in this moment, or what could it be doing for me if I choose to think about it in a different way?
Either way,
Okay.
it doesn't matter.
So I think if I chose to think about it in a different way, I could maybe apply my anxiety to helping myself and others. I think that feeling my feelings helps shrink those monster feelings, and makes them more manageable every day.
What do you think your anxiety is trying to help you with? Because it would not be there if it did not have a damn good reason.
Control. It's all about control. I want
Yeah.
control over everything. And I wrap my arms around everything so tightly that when I can't keep it all together, then I just feel like everything falls apart. It's catastrophe.
So your anxiety is trying to, like its secret message is, I would love for you to sit and think about what is actually in your control and what's not, rather than trying to control it all or control nothing. So I want you to think about this call. One part of you is saying, like, I'm trying to hold it all and blah, blah, blah. But when you started the call, it's, I'm completely helpless and there's nothing I can do about anything.
I don't.
Which I can see why that would drive your anxiety if you're like, no, I want to control it all. And then you're
Yeah.
telling this big story of like the world and there's nothing I can do.
Right. Yeah. It's, and I intellectually, I know that that is just a story.
Right. But I don't think you've actually laid out the proof on paper on things that are absolutely in my control. The things that I totally can control. I may not be doing it right now, but there are things that are within my control. Then we have a middle column. This is the most important column, I think, for all the people who suffer from anxiety. I do not have total control, but here are the parts I can. So, in some ways, like let's just take the political climate. You can vote. You can donate money to political parties you love. You can volunteer your time to go knock on doors and inform people of whatever it is you're worried about. Like, there are things, and again, I may not be doing them. Just like with politics, like, are you out there knocking on doors and trying to get people to vote your way? Are you doing all that stuff? If not, it's like, okay, I can quit telling myself there's nothing I can do about the political climate. There are things I could do, and I have to believe that if there's enough people like me doing something, we will affect change. But if there's a lot of people like me saying, I have no control, guess what we won't do? We won't change shit. So, like, and I always love this saying for myself, whatever I want to happen in the world, I get to go first. I won't say, like, I want this thing to happen in the world and I just sit back and I'm just smoking a cigarette, watching it all go down in flames. It's like, no, I need to get my ass out there so other people would get their ass out there. Then there's the third column. Shit, I'm going to get anxious about that I have no control over. Literally, I can think it through and it's like let's say it's a president. I can't control who's the president. What's in my control is where I spend my money, how I talk my politics, what I consume. Like, that is all in my control. But at the end of the day, you know, that is something I like. If I don't like it, I can't just snap my finger and change it. So doing that when you're like, I think is important when you have, I rationally know this, but for some reason my brain keeps going here. And you're in a good spot. I will tell everybody always, if we can get your rational brain to actually understand what's happening, the rest of the work gets a lot easier. The hardest thing is to convince someone that their shitty thoughts are just their thoughts. Like, if you really believe it's the truth, we got a lot of work to do. But you're in a great place. Now, what we have to do is we have to do what we call that deeper level work, where it kind of submits more deep inside you, where you're reminding yourself, like, here are things that I can do and say when I'm feeling my anxiety. Here's like you make lists of things that are in my control, somewhat in control, not in my control at all, so that your brain, even when it starts trying to chomp on the things that you know you have no control over, you can just say, I'm just going to feel you and know you're worried about it. There isn't anything we actually can do. And I know how that feels. It feels really hard. That way, you're getting to now. Instead of being helpless with those situations, you get to be understanding and compassionate. And that feels so much better than helplessness.
For sure. Absolutely.
I think if you do that, then you watch the shenanigans to eat go down. But you can use, when I was asking you about like what are the good things anxiety does for us, I think for you, it's like it keeps coming up saying, I would love for you to have more compassion for what we're going through instead of being mad or being upset about what we're going through. I think for all of you, I think like if we just take political climate and stuff, anxiety, if you don't like the political and climate, anxiety is telling you that there might be things that you want to do in this world to change it. It's alerting you to these are my values and they don't match up. That's the good thing about anxiety. Because if you didn't have anxiety, you wouldn't give a shit about anything. Like you think about anxiety is one of the big feelings that keeps us very safe. Its job is to protect us, and its job is, in order to protect us, it has to know where danger lurks. And our brains, because we don't live in a very primitive world where there's real danger right around the, I mean, like literally around the corner. There's the puma hiding behind. I see his tail sticking out from behind the rock. He's going to eat me if I don't run. We need anxiety real bad back in the day. Right now, what you were saying is I don't need this much anxiety about what's going on in the world. I actually need understanding, compassion for myself. I need to figure out what I can and can't control. I need to figure out what's real and what's coming at me and what my brain is worried could be worst case scenario. And that is what our brains err on when we have anxious brains. It's never, ever telling us reality. It's always, this is the absolute worst thing that could happen. And so I'm going to tell you all about it. My best one, not my best friend, one of my dear friends, his name is Warren. And he calls it hypothetical hell. He's got ADHD, autism, a sweet guy. He's married to one of like our business clients, Roberto. And when Warren's in the room, he's talking a mile a minute for about 3 hours. I told Chris one day, I said, I don't think he breathes. I was like, I really don't think he does. But he always says, I go into hypothetical hell. And he's labeled it that so that when he's doing it, he can say, this is hypothetical hell.
I love that
And I
stance.
know what hypothetical hell is. It is where I worry about things that have not happened, that have a low chance of actually coming true, but my brain makes it feel like it's very real. And he does that to ground himself. So I think for you, like embracing the idea that feeling your feelings is what's actually going to help you feel very powerful instead of feeling my feelings somehow hurts me. It's like, it's uncomfortable, but it's got too many payoffs to give it up. Does
Yeah.
that help at all?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And just give yourself also a little grace and compassion for the next few weeks. Whenever we're coming off our meds, our brains are like at their worst because, like, I mean, you just have to think about the brain. It is trying to recalibrate. And so it's not trying on purpose to hurt you. It's just literally trying. Like right now, I just went on Wellbutrin.
I'm
And
on that now as well.
I hope it works because me and Logan are both on it.
I so far I love
Logan
it.
is 8 weeks ahead of me. I'm only 1 week in, so I don't get to feel nothing just yet. But I feel like things are changing a little bit, but I don't really know. So now my brain is like all worrying that it will or won't work. Like it's, kicking up all of its energy and stuff. So I just always have to remind myself until I get to more of a stabilized point. My brain is probably going to not work the way I'm used to it. And I just got to be like understanding about that. I don't even have to be okay. It's more like I just understand why my brain's not working the way it normally does. It will level out.
I
Well,
started
good luck on
taking
your Wellbutrin. I
Wellbutrin.
heard good things about it. So my doctor's been trying to get it on me for 2 years. He finally was like, you're coming in here every 2 year or every year complaining about the same shit. I really encourage you to try it this year for your
Yeah.
own sake.
I was on a different medication for 12 years and have tapered off of that. And I'm taking, and I have been taking the Wellbutrin now since like April. So it's that tapering off of that medication that I had been on for 12 years. I think that has really diminished my capacity at the moment. And I know that it's just, again, I'm doing the shenanigans.
Get to know the actual body feelings that give you, like, it's just like when I do, when I used to just get angry and like I would get angry about something. And from that moment on, it was burn the city down. I was like Godzilla hitting Tokyo, just, and like, getting pissed at Chris and needing him to be pissed. Like, I wouldn't even stop talking to him. It was like, if I'm mad, everybody's got to be mad. And then I would like do things to make everybody pissed because I want them to match my energy. And so it took me a while to like, but the first thing was I just got really aware that the pattern I was creating. Then I had to get really like clear on how do I want to be when I'm angry? Like I'm asking you, like, how do you want to be when you're anxious? Not how do we get out of it? How do we solve it? How do we get away from it? It's like, when I'm angry, what do I want it to look like? And I knew I didn't want to be yelling at people. I didn't want to have to be apologizing later for how I acted. So I was like, I want to feel pissed. I want to just be alone. I want to give myself like, X amount of hours before I talk to any, like if I'm mad at Chris, I usually give myself like 8 hours or until I'm feeling different. But it's most of the time for me, it's about 8 hours. That's how angry I get at things. And I'm like, I always like, I just came up with a protocol. And then I'm just mad. And when I'm just mad and I'm not changing things, my brain has to think about why I'm mad. My brain now has to start thinking about what's the problem here? Why are you so pissed? And the feelings run their course through my body. Usually, in about like if I'm pissed, it takes about 10 or 15 minutes. Then, after 10 or 15 minutes of the instant anger, now I'm just like frustrated, disappointed. Like I have some kind of perspective about why I was angry. And then, like, it gets a lot easier to think about like, is this. Does this actually require a conversation? Was this me just getting pissed at dumb shit? Like, is this like I was mad, but now that I'm away from it, I'm like, I'm not even bringing this up. That's not that big a deal. I was just having a bad day. But it gives me time to let my feelings run their course. Then logical brain can kind of come back in and it starts looking at things, and it's a much more natural process. But just notice, I didn't say I fixed my life so I never feel angry. It's like, no, I know me. I'm an angry person by nature. I get angry easy. So, knowing that, here's what we're going to do. Okay. All right. Good stuff, Melissa.
Thank you.
Good luck.
All right.
All righty. Well, I'm going to. My mouse is such a goofball. I've got this Bluetooth mouse, and he turns himself off like a religion. All right, Nicole. I'm gonna read this while Nicole's coming up. Hey, Corinne. So this bitch just hit her goal weight, and now I'm about to head to Paris and Switzerland with some friends. That sounds fun. I'm on a micro dose of GLP-1, but here's the crap spinning in my head. I'm already bummed thinking I'll inevitably gain weight on this trip. Number one, we don't know if you're going to gain weight, but also most people on trips do gain weight for a variety of reasons. It doesn't always mean you gain fat. I just came back from Vegas. I did not weigh this morning because it was hot as balls in Vegas while we were there. I know I was not getting enough water. There was no way I could drink as much water was required to be outside in 110 degree weather all day. So I'm giving myself a few days. So your brain just needs to know, just because you go to Europe, it doesn't mean that you gain fat. You might gain some bloat. You may whatever. But there's so much that's in your control. And when you come back, I always advise people, I don't care if you're on a GLP-1 or whatever. If you're gone for a week, you don't weigh in for a week. Like I'm gone, I was gone for 4 days. I won't weigh in until I've been home for 4 days. Then I will weigh in. I'm going to give myself equal time because I know me. When I come home, I have a strong protocol for coming home. I started practicing it years ago. So back in the early days when I lost weight, back in the Stone Age of weight loss, I feel like that's what I am. I would go on vacation. I had no fucking intention of doing anything other than eating my way through it. This was after I'd already lost my weight. Chris and I would go to Vegas for a week. We would play poker, and I don't don't think we ate breakfast, but we'd go to the poker room as soon as they would open around 10 o'clock in the morning, and we would start with lunch at the poker table at 11 from the room service. And we would eat, I would eat grilled cheese, French fries, usually grilled cheese and French fries, sometimes fish and chips and French fries. Then around 5 o'clock, we'd eat dinner at the poker table, and we would split a big ass hot fudge sundae. And I was still eating grilled cheese or fish and chips. Then we go out drinking all night. And I think we ate before we went to bed. And we'd start the day over. And we'd do that for like 7 days. I'd come home, be up like 7 or 8 pounds. But I always trusted that I had a strong reentry plan. I didn't care if I gained weight on vacation because I was never 100 pounds overweight because I vacationed so fucking much. I was 100 pounds overweight because of all the days I was actually at home. You know, if I went on vacation 2 to 3 weeks a year, that was not my problem. Your trip to Europe is not the problem. So we have to keep some perspective. So I just come home and I would drop Chris off, immediately go to the grocery store because we'd never have groceries. And we didn't have a Shipt that we could just order. Like this was back in the Stone Age when we actually had to drive ourselves to the grocery store and buy things and bring them in the house. So I would go to the store and I always had a shopping list. I always knew convenience things to buy. I could get a rotisserie chicken and debone it in 10 minutes at home. I could buy bagged salad. I could buy hard-boiled eggs. I could buy chickpeas, and I could have a delicious salad for 3 days until I was ready to do a food prep. I just knew, like, this is the protocol. When I come home, I start off with these things. And guess what would happen in 7 days? Every ounce of fish and chips and ice cream sundaes, and I'm sure White Russians was my drink of choice back then. Either that or white wine, gone. 7 days didn't matter. It's what you do when you get back that matters. It's how you're living your life that matters. Now, I don't eat like a crazy person when I'm on vacation, mainly because I don't like coming home constipated. My biggest why is that if I eat like a jackass on vacation, I don't shit for 3 days, and I really don't want to have to go on Colace and Miralax. Like, I'm just getting older. The colon does not behave like it did when I was in my 30s. But I have some other reasons. Back then, like during the weeks that I was at home, I ate, like I would call it like clean and healthy. We only went out for date night. Chris and I were in the throes of raising Logan as a little kid. So we didn't go out to eat very much because Logan didn't do restaurants very well. So I was always just eating just like my little bodybuilder self, just whatever. So when I'd go on vacation, that was like the first hurrah to have foods and not have a kid to deal with. Like I could just eat in fucking peace. And it was amazing. Now I eat in peace all the fucking time. I order my chicken livers every week. When I go out of town, it doesn't feel like some kind of, amazing experience. So I just don't need it. But I still have a reentry plan every single time. I'm sorry, I brought you up and I'm answering all her questions. Just hang out, Nicole. Around friends, I eat without thinking, like I don't want to be the weird one making different choices. So I just blend in. That is what you need to do your thought work on. What are your, like, you need to, like, really think about. It's fine if you want to eat whatever you want to blend in, if that's going to give you a better vacation experience, but at least give yourself the opportunity to know, would your friends care? And that's for you to answer. If I was going on a trip with a bunch of friends who were going to just eat their face off the entire time, and they would want me to be partaking in all their delights and stuff, and they might feel weird if I'm eating like that. Maybe some of them would even feel bad or whatever. Because I will be honest, I go on trips sometimes with people who are not in the same shape as I am. And they do feel bad and they will make comments. And so sometimes I eat fun foods and I don't even want them. But I eat them because this is a moment where I'm like, I know exactly what I'm doing. And I am okay with it. I know me. I will go home and be just fine. So that's just a decision that we make. There's no right or wrong on that. But if you haven't even taken the time to see, like I have other friends, I could go and I could eat broccoli for every meal and drink water, and not a soul would say a word nor give a shit. On those trips, I wouldn't be eating to fit in. Because I would have thought about those particular friends. I'm like, they're just different friends. They don't really care what I eat. I'm making it a big deal. So at least give yourself the opportunity to evaluate your friends. Is what you're thinking will happen? Like, do they make it a big deal? Do they actually say those things? Or am I just doing that without really thinking it through? And then at the end of the day, decide what you want to do. I just want all of you to always feel like you are in the driver's seat behind your food choices, not the world is in the driver's seat. And if you want to eat to fit in, because it's like it means a lot to you for everybody to feel comfortable and that this is a group of friends that might not, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Just trust that when you get home, you know exactly how to eat to lose weight. If you gain any, it's not a big deal. And then of course my brain is like, girl, you better eat everything. You're in, it says a not, but I don't, probably another country. She must have hit reply. Okay. On this one, this is where I would just be like, my brain is signaling it wants to have fun. And so I would write about how to have fun on this trip. All the things. Not just the food, everything you want to do, moments you don't want to miss, conversation, like I want to laugh with my girlfriends. I want to like all the things that you want to do. And what parts of the trip will be fun and like what foods are you looking forward to? Because again, the problem isn't that you're going to Europe for 10 days or 7 days or however long you're going. That was never your weight problem, ever. But there may be foods. Like every time I go to Vegas, there's certain foods I love when we go to Vegas, and every single time I get them. Because I only get them in Vegas. They don't have them in Nolensville, Tennessee. Like I'm not getting octopus anywhere in Nolensville, Tennessee. If I did, it would be a sea urchin from the lake. It would be called an octopus. But there's like a vegan strawberry cake. It just happens to be vegan. I don't know. Chris and I are not vegans, but we tried it one day. It's delicious. And now we get it one night, every single night when we're in Vegas. And it's fine. Like, this is where we have to remind ourselves, like, your brain is almost signaling me wanting to enjoy food is a problem. And I'm like, you enjoying food should be the way you lose weight. We just want to be clear and decisive, and we want it to feel really good and like a choice. What we don't want to do is be so afraid of going over there and so afraid of eating good foods as if that's a bad thing that you just shut it all down because you want to have fun. And if you're going to be freaking out about food the whole time, guess what your brain will do? Well, you wanted to have fun, and you're having anything but fun right now because all you're doing is worrying about what you're eating. So let's just go into fuck it mode. Make no decisions for yourself and then come back with an ass full of regret. That will not be fun. Okay. Nicole, it's your turn.
Hello, can you hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. So I started taking the GLP-1 shot like 15 weeks ago, and I've lost 15 pounds, and it's been great. Like, it's also just helped me a ton with inflammation, which is great. But the last few weeks, there's a lot of stuff going on. I've got some things going on with my stepmom, and I've got some stuff going on with my stepson, and I just all of the food thoughts and the desire to binge just seem to be like rushing back in, and I'm struggling with managing them. Like I just
Which scares the heck out of me, because then I think if I ever go off the shot, I'll just go crazy. Like, I haven't gained weight. I've stayed pretty, the last 4 weeks I've been like basically the same, 0.2 pounds up, 0.2 down, whatever. So I'm not making progress like I want to, but I'm just not sure how to handle all these thoughts. And I'm so upset at my brain because all of this, it keeps throwing out, well, just eat something. We'll just eat something. And then sometimes
Why are
I
you mad at
am.
your brain that when you're going through extraordinary things that your brain is like, well, if you don't address them, I just want to make you feel better. Why are we angry at our brain for doing that?
Because I thought I'd made strides. I thought, like,
You have made strides.
don't feel
Like,
like I
this is
have.
not your brain. I know, but this is what you got to understand. Your brain hasn't gone backward. Your brain has said, hey, when nothing was going on, this is really easy. I can just turn down the food thoughts because nothing's really going on. You got these shots coming in. That's kind of helping and whatnot. Then stepmom and stepson come entering in like, hey, time to disrupt the ship. And they're acting the ass or having problems or whatever is going on over there, right? Stressing you out. And you're like, I'm so pissed at my brain. I'm somehow going backward because my brain is like, problem, problem, problem. You want to feel better? I don't know what else to do because you're not addressing the problem. Hey, let me turn back on the neural pathway that says food will fix it. Food won't fix the situation, but to your brain, food will make you feel better because right now you're not making yourself feel better about this at all. You're just letting this situation be the story you tell. And the story you tell must be bothering you so much so that your brain says, we should probably binge over this. So why are we mad at our brain? What it like, it didn't go backward.
I guess because a lot of the things going on, like, have been going on, like, it's come back. And so I feel like I had worked through a lot of it. Like with my stepmom, I feel like I'd finally gotten to a point of knowing, a leopard doesn't change its spots, and this is how it's going to be.
Tell me what's happened with the stepmom as succinctly as possible that's like made that story not work.
So when my father died, she sued me and my brothers over his estate and said a lot of real hurtful things and threatened
Recently,
restraining.
like that's what's happening right now.
No, so that's what happened a few years ago,
No,
and
no,
I
no.
finally.
I want to know like what has happened right now. That you're like, we don't need the back catalog because you already dealt with the back catalog. All of that stuff is like that worked with that's just the way she is.
Yeah.
But something has
So
happened now that has made you be like, that story's no longer any good.
I guess maybe it really hasn't worked for me, and I thought it had, because all that's happened now is I've learned that she's been moved into a nursing home in a memory care unit. And I have feelings of guilt about that.
Oh, so that story does work. It's just you haven't dealt with the guilt. Why are you feeling guilty that your stepmom is in a memory care facility?
Because I decided to cut her out when all the things was happening with Dad's estate. Because I couldn't deal with it anymore, and I couldn't believe the things she was saying and threatening about me and my brothers.
Okay, so you did something
So,
very loving for you, very
yeah.
protective for your family. And now that the situation has changed, she's in a memory care facility, you feel guilty. You're not feeling guilty for cutting her out. You're feeling guilty for another reason. We just got to figure out what that else. So I feel guilty. Why do you feel bad about it? What do you think? Go ahead. Just tell me that.
Well, I feel like things are unresolved. And I'm honestly not really a person that gives up on someone.
Okay. But well,
I
knowing that about yourself, what would you like to do? You're acting as if there's no options other than to feel guilty and binge. That's not going to resolve the situation.
I've thought a lot about like trying to go and visit her, but I don't know if I can.
Could you at least look into it? Because then that way your brain, like the nice thing when we like, well, I thought about doing this, but I don't know if I can. Well, now we're back to feeling guilty and hopeless or helpless, unresolved. It's like, well, and before we feel terrible, could we just get our facts straight? Is there an option to go visit? I could always look into that.
Yeah, I guess the biggest thing is I also have just a fear that it would blow up, like she would, kind of blow up at me like she had in the past, and that her daughter potentially would be there or find out about it, and that would cause some sort of blow up. And
Okay.
I
So
just
what
don't
could
want
you
more
do about it?
drama.
Well, this is the problem. You've got to decide to either do like figure out if you want to resolve this, which introduces I need to first find out if I can even go visit. Second thing I need to do is probably give the daughter a heads up. Like, don't just show up like the Kool-Aid man and then be like, oh my God, she's pissed that I came and all these other things. It's like, if you already think the likelihood of her being pissed or whatever is happening, we probably give her a heads up. Then she's either going to say, come or not come. But at least then, right now, your brain is in hypothetical hell and you're giving it no facts. You're just letting it run all over you. Or, we do that to cut drama. We have to come over here and we actually have to cut the drama because you think I don't want to introduce any more drama to my life. You are introducing drama every time you think about it. So much so, your brain thinks it needs to binge about it. You are dramatizing all of this instead of, I did the best I could for my family. That woman was causing a lot of problems. I don't like giving up on people, but at the time, just because I don't like giving up on people doesn't mean that it wasn't the right thing to do. And you need to like really understand you really did the right thing. You need to go back and think, what if I'd kept her in my life? Because you've already said it. That leopard was not changing her spots. So I was going to leave drama in my family's life for years and years and years. Our brains love to, especially in the moment when we feel guilty about something, it likes to go back in time and find the inflection point of where you could have saved yourself all this guilt. But it's really terrible at remembering why you stopped doing this in the first place. And it like it would have happened. This is the terrible nightmare we would have lived just so I wouldn't feel guilty today. My whole family would have had to be dealing with this. I mean, hate to say it, bitch, but we'll just say it. Like for years. And then I would have been feeling guilty for keeping her in my life. And feeling guilty for all the damage that she was doing, just so today I don't have to feel guilty that she's in a home. I made the absolute best decision because if the worst thing that happens is today, I just got to figure out my guilt. And I saved my family and everybody around me years of heartache. I will take that every day and twice on Sunday. You have, like, this is my coach always tells me, Corinne, when something's done, it is your job to make yourself right. do not make yourself wrong, because every single time you make yourself wrong, Nicole, you're arguing with facts. Facts always win. You absolutely did the best thing. There's no second guessing this. Now, you just have to tell yourself, I'm just feeling guilty because she's in a nursing home. I wish she would have been different so that I could have kept her in my life. She was never going to be that way. I did the best thing for my family. And now I just got to decide, do I want to do something different knowing where we're at now? Because I think you'll make a much better choice if you do it because it's part of your value system, not because you're feeling guilty. Making decisions from guilt almost always makes us make the wrong choice. But if you decide, I did the best I could, I think this was the absolute right decision. Now that I look at the part that my brain hasn't looked at yet. Now, do I want to go visit her or not? So, what do you think? Just based on how I've told the story.
I mean, I do believe that I did the best I could for that time, and I've saved myself some heartache and my family heartache by just, telling myself every time I have a thought about her, just saying, you can't change how she acts. You going over there or you trying to do something different isn't going to change how she responds to you. There's nothing I can say to change that. I do believe that. I guess just every once in a while it creeps up saying, but should I give up?
You
Now
know
that
what?
she's in a different place, now that she's in the nursing home, should I go try again? Like I feel like I gave up, and I gave up at the time a few years ago because I just couldn't handle it anymore, and the family couldn't handle it anymore. It was just, we
I
just
don't
had to
think you
stop.
gave up. I think that's the most painful thing, that you are taking the blame. Like, this was a me problem, not a her problem. Like, well, she can't change and I gave up. Do you see how like awful that sounds? I don't think you gave, like, how did you give up? It sounds more like to me, I looked at the way my family was suffering and I made a choice knowing she wasn't going to change. I had to decide, do I keep putting them through this because she's not going to change, or do I stop putting them through this because she's not going to change? That is not you giving up. That was you making a decision based on how she was acting. But your story is, no matter how she acts, I gave up. Like, I was the problem. If I had just been stronger, if I'd just been able to take it in the ass better with no lube, we'd all be fine now.
No, that's not true. I know that's not true. I know it wouldn't.
Let's do this for your brain. You were at a crossroads. I can go with how she is and keep her in our life, or I can do it just like I did it. Know how she is and decide my family's too valuable to keep putting them through this. Like, I hate that she acts this way. I wish we could have a different relationship, like all of that, but that's not reality. Now, let's pretend she stayed in your life. What would things have been like?
Hard, horrible.
Well, let
I
me
don't
just
know
tell
that I
you, you
could
made
have
the right
done
decision if the first thing that comes out of your mouth is, ugh.
it. Yeah. No, I don't know that I mean, I did it to protect me too. Like, I don't know that I could have mentally and just physically, it was exhausting. Like, it was just breaking me down, Like,
Right.
beyond what it was doing with my family, just for me, I just,
That's
yeah.
even better. That's even more noble. Most women will take it in the ass because they don't think them of themselves as valuable or important enough to end a relationship. It's like, well, no, I need to have all the stakes rise because my needs are not that important. But you were not like that. You were like, I deserve better. You never gave up on her. You looked at her for face value. You knew that you deserved better treatment, that the way it was going, you could not handle that anymore. And she wasn't going to change. And you were smart enough to put yourself in a position to thrive and not have to deal with that. You have nothing to feel guilty about. Now, you can be disappointed that you had to make the decision. You can be disappointed that it came to that because she wasn't going to change. Be disappointed that the relationship, that we're now at a point where you're like, I wish the relationship had been different. But she would have had to have been different. And that wasn't going to happen. Now you just get to decide from like what we call a clean a space, which is, I'm going to decide from, like, if you're going to go back and visit or whatever, do it because it matches your core values. Don't do it because you're like, well, I feel like a stupid son of a bitch who should have never done it, and I'm all guilty for it. I'm a bad person, and blah, blah, blah. Then you're going to go in and you're going to be anxious. You're not going to be able to, you will not get what you want out of it. It won't matter if she has or hasn't changed. All you will do is read all the ways that, like, you should have never done that in the beginning. Like, you're going to go in and you're not going to walk out with anything other than more feelings of guilt. So let's do this to decide. Let's say you are going to go and you want to talk to her and you want to visit. Best possible outcome. What is it that you hope that you feel when you leave? Not what's said or whatever. That if I go and do this, I'm doing it because I hope after I feel this way.
Relieved, maybe.
Relief from what?
I don't know that I had the conversation, that I went, I tried again, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. I really don't, I guess I don't know what the point is of going.
What do you hope?
I mean, I hope that she would apologize. I hope that she would give us our dad's things.
Okay.
I
Oh,
mean,
this is where I want you to really decide if you want to do this. You are going with what we call an ulterior motive. You're not going because you don't like to give up on people. You're going hoping, number one, that she is going to miraculously turn into some other human being. The likelihood of her doing all that, based on what you've told me, and I don't know much, is like negative 10.
yeah.
So there's that. So you're literally going to be disappointed. Know that. And I just want you to decide if you want to be this person. You're not going from love. You're not going because you're such a good person. You're going because you have an agenda. I want my dad's things back. I could give a shit about her. But I'm going to go and I'm going to only be happy if I get what I want. Because I guarantee you, if that's the best we can come up with for going and we're not going to get it, you are going to feel way worse when you come home than you do right now. Now, if you think there is a legit somehow change in the world that you think where she's going to be like, you know, now that I'm in a memory care facility, I've had a change of heart. I've changed, Nicole. I want you to have everything you want. It'd be great, but
Yeah,
that's why
that's
I
not going to
always tell
happen.
people you really want to figure out what you're hoping for or what you're wanting. Because now you get to decide, is it literally worth going if all I'm really wanting is my dad's stuff back? And if she's probably not going to give it to me, I got to decide. Then if she's really not going to give it to me, I need to go and I need to be very happy when I leave because I tried in this relationship one last time. I'm proud of me. I don't want you coming home mad and disappointed and still feeling guilty.
Yeah. And I don't think she's gonna change or she has changed. Heck, I don't even know how her memory is. I mean, I haven't spoken to her in so long. I don't even know. Yeah. I guess I just have to let go of the hope that something will be different.
Yeah,
And
usually, go ahead. What were we gonna say?
I just figure out a way to process all those feelings. I guess I kind of thought I'd processed it to an extent of like cutting her off and just being done. And I think I kept thinking that when she passes away, because she's elderly, that stuff would come up. I guess I'm surprised that it came up now, finding out she's in a nursing home. I guess I wasn't ready for that.
What are you really feeling other than the guilt? Are you sad?
Yeah, I mean, it's very disappointing. I mean, my mom died when I was 19. She was married to my father for 25 years. She's been in my life longer than my own mother was.
Yeah.
So to have this person, I mean, for my nieces and nephews, it's the only grandmother they've ever known. To have this person who was such an important part of your life treat us so badly and say such nasty things.
See, I think you never dealt with that part. I think you cut her out and stuff to protect you from like basically her bitchiness and meanness, but I don't think you ever grieved losing an important person. Like, not only did you lose an important person, but you also lost this relationship you never really had.
Yeah.
Like you lost so much, and I don't
Right.
think you've given yourself time to really cry and, you know, be there for yourself. Like, this is disappointing. This is someone that you wanted to, you know, love you like your own mother. She was a big part of your life. And it's awful when someone, because I don't think you have high expectations. Like, there's some thoughts in the coaching world about having what we call a manual for how people should behave. We all have them.
Yeah.
Everybody has their list of things that they think like a good mom should do, and you know, like a good stepmother, and you know, she should be this way and she should be that way. And it only gets in our way when we are holding someone to either an impossible standard, we haven't checked our standards in a while. And we're holding them to things that we're like, you know, that they can't be. Like, my dad is very emotionally like stunted. I swear he quit emotionally growing at about 16. He still like sometimes emotionally acts like a teenager, and he's, you know, 67 years old. And so I had to drop the part of my rule book about good fathers would listen to you, good fathers call you on your birthday, and things like that. And I just had to tell myself, that's not my dad. My dad didn't even have capacity to do that. Now, I'm real clear with myself, and I will say, like, it's really sad and it's really disappointing on birthdays and holidays when he doesn't call, because I would really love it. It would mean so much to me. And I don't get mad and I don't have these other feelings because I also know it's not in his abilities. He can't do those things. And so
Yeah,
I
I
just
mean,
go ahead.
I don't have those kind of expectations from her. She never was a very motherly type person, so I don't have that type of expectation, but we found a relationship or whatever, right? When she first came into the picture, I think it was weird. What's this going to be like? And whatever, and figured that part of it. I just didn't expect her to I guess, just turn on us all and be so malicious after all of the years we spent together and the things that we did for her and for my dad. And I don't know. I guess maybe I haven't really gotten
Part of
over all
your, I
that.
will say, you do have one part of your manual that's probably not working for you. She should be grateful, or she should be reciprocal. Something along the lines of, she should have been this way because we did all these things. Or she should be this way because she was married to my dad all these years.
I
Like, you
just
said
don't.
that several times, that she should have like handled his possessions differently because of these reasons. And that, not to say it's wrong, it's for you to just recognize it's causing me a lot of pain to keep think like basically holding her to a standard that she's not.
Yeah, I guess I'm just still shocked how she did react and what she did,
And I
I
think
think it's
that's a,
not fair. Like
yeah, so.
we didn't do anything to deserve that, I guess.
Right. And nobody does, I mean, technically. But this is the thing that I would ask you is, when I'm shocked, there's a part of me that's still, that really hasn't gotten over what happened. Now, how do I want to be there for that version of me, the part that still hurts? How do I want to be there for the part of me that wishes things were different? How do I want to be there for the version of me that like hates that it came to all of this? Because there's a version of you living on the inside of you who is like still here, still hating the way it all went down, still shocked and dismayed that she acted like a fool, still this, and you're just like, nope, not doing that. Gonna blame myself. Guilty. I should go binge. That's what I should do. And it's like that part will keep knocking on the door until you're like, okay, there's a big part of me that's like, and it came back up because you got a new information around it. That's why this part, this shocked part and stuff is like, oh, when you cut her out of your life, it wasn't getting triggered at all. So it's not you going backward. It's not you like all these things. The food thoughts are just aftershocks from really this event. It's like, I am just now feeling a lot of the things that I thought cutting her out of my life would just fix it. It's like,
Come
no,
back up.
I'm still like got a part of me that needs like just understanding. Like, I know you're shocked. It's very shocking. It's hard when people you love or who are supposed to love you or who should love you because they were a big part of your family act the fool. And you tell yourself that, you know, you don't have to make her better. You need to make you feel better that you're hurting because what she did wasn't fair. what she did wasn't right. Stop trying to make her better. Start understanding the version of you who hurts because of it and talk to her and let her know she's like, we're going to cry. I'm going to make you right. I'm going to take care of you. You're the one that needs work. That.
I just want to get past it though. I don't know. I guess for a while I said she didn't deserve my tears. Like, she doesn't deserve me.
You're not giving her your tears. You're not crying over her. You're crying for the version of you that deserved better. She's in pain. These tears are not for stepmom. These tears are for Nicole. The part of Nicole that really thought that when her dad passed, this woman would do the right thing. And she's not going to get past it until you say, you deserve to hurt. It was not right. I think you're going to get past it a lot faster than you think. If you will just do some of the things like we talked about, like retelling the story. I don't need to feel guilty. This literally was the best decision. Yeah. And then you do the other half where you look at, like, I don't need to keep trying to make it feel like she's not changing. It's like, no, she's not. But there's a part of you who's like, no, she's not changing. She is a bitch and you will not let me think about it. You will not let me feel bad that she dumped all over us. You yeah. cut her out of our life and you moved on and you never really talked to me about, like, it is okay to feel bad that someone was a douche to you.
Yeah.
And like say, I'm not to blame. Cause I wonder how many of these years you've been kind of subtly feeling guilty for like almost taking the blame. And now it's just coming to a head instead of all these years reminding yourself, I did the best thing I could. And that's just the way she is. And a part of me will always wish I had my daddy's things. A part of me will always wish that things would have been different. And just acknowledging that rather than like the second your brain is just like, oh, I wish we had our daddy's things. Oh no, we're thinking about stepmom. She's never going to change. We should go eat. She just knows how much more energy. Like when you're just like, I just want to get past this part. Probably because you just want the easy part to come.
Yeah.
Like one of the words you used was relief.
Yeah.
When you are arguing against it, when you are trying not to feel it, you don't feel relief. It takes work. That's why I get so animated when I talk to y'all, because I want y'all to see on the inside, that's what your brain is doing. Your brain is like, oh my God, we shouldn't feel this.
Yeah.
You guilty bitch. You know, and then it gets like worked up and you're starting to get anxious and it's like, oh my gosh, I can't feel these things. So let me go and like busy myself with like food and whatever, rather than just being like, I know today's one of those days where we're really sad that we don't have our daddy's things. It'd be great to have them. And then you cry a little bit. Like, I miss my daddy so much. I wish that, you know, like having her in my life might have made me feel like maybe he was still there somehow. And that never happened. And I'm upset about it. And like you actually just like when we do that, just notice how like I'm not screaming and hollering. I'm calm. And I probably cry. I cry about things all the time, like out of the blue. I always tell y'all, my grandmother's been dead like 20 something years now. And there's not a week that goes by, something doesn't happen, and I don't cry. It's always something silly. I was looking through some digital photos the other day. The team was asking me, do you have any more of your like little kid fat photos? And I was like, well, let me go to the digital archives. And I found a letter from my granny bald.
And back again. Yeah.
Missing him.
Yeah.
Knowing she could have been alive.
Yeah. And yeah. That happens. I mean, having lost my mom so many years ago, like, I know those things come back up. And I guess, this is harder because it's tied with when dad died. And so it's like losing two big relationships. And
And
I,
this one's harder because, like, with your mom, you don't have a lot of guilt and you don't have a lot of
yeah.
extra feelings going on there. And over here, it's harder because, well, there's animosity and there's
Yeah.
guilt and there's these things happening. And we work through that. We turn animosity into self-compassion that a part of you wishes it was different.
Right.
Then it becomes easier, like it is, like it's easy for you to miss your mom. It makes
Yeah.
sense.
Right.
Now it will feel like it's easy to go through that over here, and it will make sense. That's how we can make them the same, even though they're different situations.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about y'all's GLP-1 call today, but we for sure did not talk about weight loss. I
Yeah.
always say, y'all, every single time, I don't care what you've done, that eating ain't got nothing to do with anything else other than what is the bullshit going on in your life right now that you ain't talking about. You're too busy trying to figure out a hack to not eat. It's like, dress the bullshit, we take down the need to eat.
Yeah.
So, back to the eating part, just so you know. I'm not worried about you because you are very aware. What is it that you said you for 4 weeks, you know you're emotionally eating? What
Yeah.
did you said in the beginning?
Yeah, well, I haven't gained weight. I just haven't lost any extra, and I know it's just because there's stuff going on. And I guess what surprised me is how much the food thoughts came back so quickly.
And now that we've talked, it makes a lot of sense.
It does.
Like you would need a shot that would stop a bull elephant for
Right.
these emotions.
Right. To
There's
shut
no
down those
shot coming that's
emotions.
going to take all that away.
Right.
And so your
Yeah.
brain, always remember y'all who are on the shots, they're not changing your emotions. They're not changing your perceptions of your life. They are very powerful in really good ways. So, like, they do take food, like, people think food noise is going down. What's really happening is because you're not hungry very often, then the trigger to think about food has been removed. That's why people think food noise gets turned down. But when we say it or when you hear it, you think there's something magical going on with a shot that somehow is tapping into the center of your brain that obsesses about food. No, it's not really working like that. It's like it's taking away a lot of triggers, but the trigger that can't take away is your emotional triggers.
Yeah. It's yeah, the
Unless you're so nauseated from the
yeah.
shot that you like your emotional state can't override nausea. Eventually, there's people, I coach people on this all the time. Eventually, somebody will be like, I don't care how nauseous I am. I feel so bad. I'm going to binge. It's just like when people have weight loss surgery, they physically can't eat much food. But if they have a bad day, they override it, knowing how much pain and suffering they're going to be in. Because, I mean, you think all of us who binge with a normal belly,
Yeah.
try doing it with a reconstructed one. It's a whole nother ball game for those people. And yet, they will choose that pain and suffering physically over the emotional pain and suffering that they're experiencing. So just keep that in mind when we talk about food noise. So for you, shots are still working just fine. They're doing their job.
Yeah.
But you've now had events in your life that need deep examining on your behalf so that you get the relief, you get to feel better. When those things come down, guess what happens to that food noise? Start tampering back off because your brain is like, it doesn't feel, like guilt is one of the major feelings. There's I'm gonna have to look this up again. I used to teach it a long time ago and I've kind of gotten away from it. There's like seven major feelings, especially when it comes to emotional eating and binge eating, that the brain, like, it's like the seven deadly sins. It's very aware when they're happening. Guilt and shame are up in there.
Yeah.
I want to say anger is another one. It's like the big ones, you know, like the what we would call the inflammatory feelings. And when you are having guilt or shame around your decisions and things like that, that is why your brain is like, oh my gosh, I got to help her. Because if you're not helping yourself by re-examining the story, your brain will help you with the food because it literally is just wanting you to feel better. It's not out to get you. It's not going backward. It's doing what it's wired to do. So the reason why I'm not worried about you is that you know it's happening. It's when we don't realize it's happening, we have a problem. You know you're doing it. You can watch yourself want to binge. You're very aware of the two big triggers you have right now, stepmom, stepson. Because you know so much, you can overcome this. That won't be the problem. Okay.
Right. Okay.
Take the stepson to ask coaches.
Okay. We'll do.
Take that situation. We've already worked on stepmom.
Yeah.
Now, and you don't have to, don't do this today. Give yourself a few days of dealing with the stepmom stuff. Let it marinate, re-listen to this so you can really hear things that I said that you're going to forget because you were, you know, live. And then in a few days, think about some of the questions I asked you and then take what you think is happening with the stepson over to ask coaches and let them kind of work through this also over there. So you can start getting some of that relief you're really seeking. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, y'all. That's all we got for today. I hope that y'all have a really good month. I think we're going to be doing this call again next month. We're going to do it for a little bit to just see what people get out of it. Like, do y'all show up? Do you ask questions? Do you get coached? The just so all of you know that whenever we test drive some calls, the way we know whether or not to keep them or not is one is attendance. And we had plenty of people here today. We had over 100 people here today. That to me is a winner, especially because this one is out on a Tuesday at 1 o'clock. So I appreciate all of you who were here. Second thing is, do people raise their hand? There's no sense in Corinne coming to a call if no one's going to raise their hand and get coached. Like, I can't just like make some shit up to talk about every single day. So if you're here asking questions and getting coached, that's the second factor to whether or not calls stay. If you can only do replays, you cannot come and get coached live. What you can do is you can always use, there's a blue question mark on the website. You can log in. And you can say, I would love for Corinne to answer this on the next call because I'd like to hear her answer. You can put it in the Facebook group too, and Ashley would get it to me because Ashley is your coach for the GLP-1 medical weight loss group. But you can also use a blue question mark if you would like to hear my answer. So just give me good information. But if you write in a day or two before, at least, or it doesn't matter when, just don't do it the day of and expect me to have greatness. I might have some questions so that I can answer it live. So it gives us time to get a little bit of more information from you if I need it. The third deciding factor is replays. And some of y'all asked about, like, well, how do y'all decide on these calls? And they thought that. Literally, somebody thought that I was just picking and choosing at whim. And I'm like, no, I actually do things based on a little bit of data. So I am very much go with your gut, but I do this stuff on data. The third big thing is it being listened to? We track the downloads and the listens on the podcast, and we do the same thing on the website for the videos. That's how we decide. So if you're all ever wondering, like, why do some calls make it and why do some calls not? That's the reason. But I also know when calls are new, we have to do them a few times just to make sure everybody knows that they're available and that they're here for them. Okay. So, for all of you that showed up and who are going to listen to this, spread the good word. Go to the medical weight loss group in Facebook. Talk about what you learned. Talk about like what you liked, all that kind of stuff. And that encourages other people to think about listening, and it encourages other people to know that we have it available. All right. And with that, I got to go work out. I just came back from Vegas yesterday. Part of the Vegas protocol is the day I get back, I always go to the gym. I don't care how tired I am. I go to get back into the groove because I don't exercise on vacation very much anymore. I go for a lot of walks, and I just Marco Polo Jane basically on vacation almost every day. And usually they're over an hour because I got a lot to tell her. And I don't really work out as much anymore. I just have gotten where I don't like lifting weights when I'm out of town because I can't do it the way I want to do it. So I just do it when I'm at home. But I always go to the gym. And it doesn't matter what the workout is. It is not so much to have a good workout. It is to train my brain that when we're home, this is the routine. So I keep the routine up as I get back into it as fast as possible. So those neural pathways are like, oh, we're not on vacation anymore. This is what we're doing. I light my neural pathways back up. Okay. With that, I'll see y'all later. Bye, y'all.